And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
I'm here, so
I'm Shea Gibbs Alexander, and I'm down to dunk.
Howdy, Oklahoma.
My name is Chet Holmgren, and I'm down to dunk.
Dead gum.
I'm Josh Giddey, and I'm down to dunk.
This is Lou Dort,
and I'm down to dunk.
Is that like you eat them together?
Everybody tells him to get the bag of burgers.
I need like a straw, like.
Howdy. I'm an artist on the court.
This is Jay Will, and I'm down to dunk.
My name is Kenrich Williams, and I'm down to dunk.
It might be Aaron Wiggins.
This is a troll. It's a troll. I'm trolling.
Howdy, Papa.
Because I think it would take away from who he is, you know?
Yeah. I love Oklahoma. I love Oklahoma to death.
This is Lou Dort, and I'm down to Dort.
Perfect. Good. Very good.
I like the hat.
You like the hat? Yeah.
Vava.
This is J-Dub, and I'm down to dunk. I've been doing a lot of dunking.
Welcome to Down to Dunk. I'm your host, Andrew Schlecht. We're part of the Athletic Podcast Network. With me, as always, on Wednesdays is my good friend, Alex Spears. Alex, what's up?
What's up, Andrew? 50 wins.
50.
Big 5-0.
Wow. That's pretty crazy. I mean, I thought 50 wins would be tough to get in general this season. I predicted them to win four less than that this season.
Yeah, you said they'd win 24, if I remember correctly.
They have blown my expectations so far out of the water.
Totally blew it.
It's a pretty crazy accomplishment for them. I mean, it's something that those Russ PG teams got close to but didn't ever accomplish. You know, something that we, you know, definitely predicted that they would do. And they were never able to do it. And it's crazy that the second youngest team, I mean, if we were trying to predict even a year ago, you know, or 2 years, definitely 2 years ago, how long will it be before this Thunder team wins 50 games? I don't think we would have predicted that it would have been this soon.
No, and to do it in a year where the West is strong overall, I think is also really impressive. Mm-hmm. I mean, last year, you know, Denver led the West with 53 wins. Memphis was second with 51, and then it dropped to 48. And already this season, you have two 50-win teams. Minnesota is going to get there very shortly. They're already at 49. And then who knows? One of these teams that's down there at 44 wins, I mean, they all got like 11 games left. One of those teams might get there.
Yeah.
Or two of those teams. I mean, you got Clippers at 44, Pelicans at 44. Dallas has won 9 of 10 at 43. So to do it in a year when you're going to have at least probably double the number of 50-win teams in the West makes it even more impressive.
Yeah, it's not quite the year the Thunder made the playoffs for the first time in 2010, where
they had to get
50 in order to get in. It's not like that, but it's definitely closer than the West has been recently. I mean, it's insane, and you know we'll talk about this later, I'm sure, but like the Rockets have life again and are back in the hunt, and there are 11 teams now. You know, the Warriors and Lakers got a little bit too relaxed over the last, few weeks. And, shout out to the Rockets for getting it together. But this Pelicans game was a roller coaster. Because it felt like, they're up big at half. And you thought, okay, if they can just maintain this, not obviously this, they made 10 threes in the first half. But if they can at least be some semblance of this, they're going to kind of cruise to a victory. And that did not happen, Al.
No, I mean, especially when you're watching a game and you know you have to do a pod the next day, you know, as the game's going on, you're kind of thinking about, okay, what's like the big theme, you know, like in terms of like my emotions about the game. And it did change multiple times because, yeah, you're up at half and you're like, okay, like really super impressive win. They're blowing them out. This is amazing. Then they're down by 5 with 3 minutes left. And you're like, oh, this is, the sky is falling for the third time this season. 2 losses in a row. Now they have to do the back-to-back against Houston. And then for them to come back in that situation, in that environment, then it just flips again. And it's like, well, this is even more impressive than them blowing them out. Like losing the lead and then having to come back in crunch time is so impressive and is the kind of win that you would want to see after a loss like you saw against the Bucks.
Yep.
Like it kind of restored your faith in the team. Like, okay, that was a good team on the road and they did what they had to do at the end of a game. Like it was a very playoff vibe to that ending.
Yeah. Yeah. The resilience that it took for them to, you know, let go of the lead and then have to fight back. I mean, they're down 5 with 3 minutes left, and that's obviously not, it's not like they were down 12 with 3 minutes left, which I think they did that against the Cavs earlier this season. So they've had like crazier comebacks.
But you had that pressure of giving up 20 points.
Oh, yeah.
Just the 5 points felt like huge.
Oh, it did.
Because you had that 25 point swing.
Yeah. It felt like they felt toast. It felt over whenever they went up 5. And then obviously Josh Giddey is kind of one of like the big stories of last night. 25-9-4, hit 5 threes, career high 5 threes for Giddey, and kind of had everything going, not just the threes, but he was scoring in multiple ways, playing with a lot of effort last night too, which I think was really big for him. You know, there's offensive rebounds, you know, his floater was falling, just like his confidence is at a different level than it has been like almost all season through the month of March. He's had a really good month. You know, he's shooting like 42% from 3 in the month of March and is, you know, not taking an insignificant amount. He's looked a lot better.
Yeah, he has. And the start of that game was so interesting because New Orleans came out in a 2-3 zone, which I think was probably like a good idea because we've seen the Thunder struggle.
Yeah, it's worked. It's worked a lot in the past. Yeah.
And honestly, you look at the shots that the Thunder did get early in the first quarter and you're like, well, you know, that kind of worked for the Pelicans. The problem is that like Josh just completely broke the zone. Like the very first play, you know, off the miss, he gets that floater. And then he hits 2 threes in a row, and it's like, all right, well, that he just blew up the zone, like kind of on his own with a little 8-0 run. Mm-hmm.
And then J-Dub had his own 8-0 run right after that.
Yeah, yeah.
So I
was just, it's one of those things like you still don't know how much you can trust it, but those opening sequences in the playoffs are going to be so huge because if you have a sequence like you had last night where they're forcing you into the shots you don't want to take, which is what happens in the playoffs. If Josh, even if he hits like 1 of 2 threes just to start the game, I think that's just going to be such a boost to the team because the alternative was, you know, if they stay in that zone and he misses his first 2 threes, like I just think the offense, you know, you start losing confidence, you start forcing stuff. Again, those weren't shots necessarily they want to take. Like if you were listing out all the players you would want to take a shot at the beginning of the game. But when he makes them like that, it just flips everything and kind of helps propel them to be confident and then get that big early lead eventually. He was good all game. Like I wrote down, I thought his most impressive play was in the third quarter. Chet blocked Trey Murphy.
Yes.
And
the two-handed block.
Giddey got the ball. Yeah, two-hand block. And Giddey got the ball and went coast-to-coast, spun on CJ. There were like 2 other Pelicans trying to contest it, and he got a layup. I just thought that was really impressive because we've seen him struggle in transition this season. And to be that decisive right from the jump, like right when he got the ball, it looks like he knew what he wanted to do. I thought that was really impressive.
Yeah.
And yeah, like the difference with this game and the Bucks game, obviously he was good in the Bucks game as well, but by some point in the third quarter, the Bucks game was over, you know? Mm-hmm. And this wasn't just a case of Giddy coming out hot, starting hot, and then like that's kind of it. Like he was hitting key shots late in that game.
Yeah.
In fact, he, after New Orleans had tied it at 99, he hits that corner three with a hand in his face. I think it was Larry Nance Jr.
Yeah, it was like 102 or something like that when he hit that three. It was just it was a huge shot. Like 5 minutes left. 5 minutes left, he hit a three to put them up. This was like the gutsiest one to me. It was when he put them up two. And it's like that deep three. It was like it was the last three that he hit. It was a deep three that he just fired away. Yeah, that's the one with Larry Nance. I'm rewatching it right now. That one was insane. And then the one in the fourth. Oh, yeah. It put them up 102-99.
Yeah.
There he is in the corner. Yeah. Nance was contesting him both times. So they put, I mean, they could not, it's a funny thing because I don't know how many people are going to point this out, but the Thunder played a big man, Jonas Valanciunas, off the court last night. They played him 11 minutes. They could not play him in this game against the Thunder. They had to go small in order to compete with the Thunder. And it helped them get back in the game, honestly, which is just funny because all the talk is about how they're just going to get killed by bigs. But it's really just like a few bigs that they're going to get killed by. And a lot of them happen to be in the Western Conference. But I just thought it was interesting, you know, that they couldn't even keep Jonas out there because they had him guarding Giddy, and Giddy obviously playing this well just kind of killed that entire plan.
Yeah, and I mean, I do think part of that, because if you go and look at his box scores, I mean, that was the fewest minutes he's played in March.
Yeah.
But they only played him over 22 minutes once in March.
Yeah.
As they've switched to more of the like point Zion, it just makes sense to not have him out there as much because it gives Zion so much more space. And Zion was good like for the majority of that game.
Oh yeah.
But seeing what happened at the end kind of got you excited because it's not that Chet was like perfect. You know, it's not like Chet shut him down. Mm-hmm. Zion still had numerous rim attempts that were good, but it did feel like, okay, this is a like viable option. You know, like they were forcing him to go right, forcing him to go to Chet. And Chet, like overall, I thought was a real presence against Zion at the rim. And it made a huge difference because you noticed when Chet wasn't in the game, it was just like a completely different ball game for Zion. Because and this is like a bigger issue that I have going forward, but like J. Will, because J. Will's not a rim protector, you know, a lot of times he would just be on Zion to start a play, as opposed to when Chet's out there, when you have like Dub or Dort on him first and they're steering him towards Chet, it was so much harder for them when Chet's off the court because now it's just like, well, J. Will's your first line and kind of last line of defense because it's not like there's going to be a shot blocker behind him. But it's not like Chet solves the Zion question, but it's a legitimate answer to Zion. And I do wonder if they did meet up in the playoffs, which we should talk about it later, but I think there's actually more of a decent chance of that than I thought. I wonder if you match Zion's minutes or you match Chet's minutes to Zion minutes, because I think it's that meaningful with Chet being on the court.
I thought J. Will did a good job in the first half against Zion. Because Zion was getting kind of whatever he wanted at the beginning of the game. And I thought that J. Will did a pretty good job of walling him off. I wonder if the Thunder kind of turn heel and just go big in a matchup like that, where you can have the rim protection and a bigger body, you know? Especially if like Josh isn't playing like he did last night, you know, which if you play them in a 7-game series, I mean, it's unlikely that Josh is going to play like that in every single game. That you just wonder if they kind of flip it and go bigger against them just to have, like, you can have Chet can cover a lot of ground. We haven't really gotten to see it But Chet can cover a lot of ground, like pretty quickly, if he needs to. And if you just basically gave Jay Will the Zion assignment, you know, he can contest the, you know, threes and be at the rim if you need him to. So I don't know. I think it's a, especially without BI, it's a pretty favorable matchup for the Thunder, as long as they can, you know, contain Zion to some degree, which Zion was still awesome last night, but they shut him down in the fourth quarter, and they, you know, it was basically CJ McCollum time in the fourth quarter. Zion was 1 of 3 in 8 minutes in the fourth.
Yeah, and you wonder, like, a lot of that end of game execution from the Pelicans, how much can you chalk it up to just not having Ingram? Because, like, Ingram gives them such a better end game option than some of what we were seeing.
Yeah.
I mean, sure. I was just going through and writing down the shots. Like, yeah, it was like CJ missed mid range, CJ missed three, Herb Jones turnover on a drive, Herb Jones missed three, mm-hmm. CJ missed layup over Chet. Like, mm-hmm. if CJ McCollum and Herb Jones are the two guys, like, running crunch time offense for you, like, yeah, it's probably not going to go well.
Yeah,
and part of that was, I mean, there were moments when Zion had the ball at the top of the key against Dort and just didn't drive.
Yeah,
like didn't even test Dort and would just pass it off, and Dort, you'd get one of these.
Dort
these
was plays. Great. Dort was great. He's very physical with him. He did not, for whatever reason, Zion did not want to try that in the fourth. And a lot of it is like Dort is just a maniac that just yeah. like never stops.
But and, if you're a Pelicans fan, like I have to imagine, like you want Zion stepping up in that moment. Like it has to be him. You don't want Herb Jones being the one who's having to like figure things out at the end of the game against against like J-Dub and Shea, you know?
I know. Yeah, I agree. You want Zion to be, and that's the thing is, I think it's exhausting to like for that to be your only thing is like driving to the hoop.
You yeah.
know, that's why, I mean, Shea didn't have his best night last night. He still had a great line, 24-5-8 with 2 steals. And he talked about how he's dealing with like this quad. I guess it's just a really bad bruise that he's dealing with
yeah.
in his quad. But he still hit that step back three, you know, at the end of the game. It was only made three, but that was the shot that tied the game, and I thought, wow. I still thought that at the time, I was like, man, I don't know if they can pull this off. And then Shea hits the step back, they get a stop, and then Dort hits the three. And then you're like, oh, Thunder, like they're definitely winning this game. like they have just stolen this game in a matter of seconds. And the play before Shea's step back was Shea's offensive rebound, like tap assist over to J-Dub to score at the hoop.
Yeah, that was
which
great.
Kind of set everything up for this, and then the defense was really good. You know, they're able to keep Zion out of the paint. They were able to basically get CJ to be the creator, and you know they defended him very well. So I thought Giddey did a good job defensively in this game too. I thought Giddey was just overall very good. You can see just like the confidence level with him changed on both ends, and some of it could certainly be some of the off the court stuff that had happened earlier this season, but you can tell that there's like a kind of like a renewed energy in him because he wasn't even closing games for them for a majority of the season. Wouldn't have been out
right.
there.
Yeah.
And last night, if he hadn't have been out there, I think people would have been like, well, where's Giddey? Need to have Josh Giddey out there. He's been playing good on both ends, and he's, you know, they're probably their best rebounder last night. I mean, there was just it was good to see that because obviously there's been a lot of hope for what he can be with this team kind of squandered, you know, throughout most of the season. But he's picked it up.
I'm looking at his career splits right now.
Yeah,
and now I'm remembering, you know, Giddey Marches of past years. Mm-hmm. It really is his month, like for his career. He is shooting 40% from three.
Weird.
in March games.
Weird.
Highest true shooting percentage of any other month. Like it's just his month.
What is up with just that?
I don't know.
That is really strange.
But you think back and like, yeah, that was absolutely the case. Because I remember last year we were talking post All-Star break, like, oh, Giddey's really coming on. Like he's starting to hit his shots. And
it's like the whole 2021 classes month.
Yeah, that's true.
It's like the whole class has been like rejuvenated this month.
Good for them. Good for them.
It's very
about
strange.
About time for some of them, about I would
time.
Say.
About time. It's very strange. But it's also good timing in that Gordon Hayward was not good.
It's getting to the point where I'm like, okay, do we need to have, like, can they actually continue playing him?
Do we need to sit him down and show him tape of Caron Butler? Do we need to just say
or of Tony Snell to show him what he did last night? I mean, at least he did take two shots, so it wasn't a true Tony Snell game, but nothing in 10 minutes.
10 minutes.
No rebounds, no assists, no steals, no blocks. Hey, no turnovers, no fouls, no points. What was he doing out there? Minus 19 somehow in 10 minutes.
Team low, minus 19. And some of it is, like, the passivity is just, it's reached new heights, it felt like last night. Or it's just like, man, like, it's starting to, you know, it felt like, okay, he's wanting to stay out of the way. That's good. But now it's like he's like staying out of the way, and it's like, wait, now he's like messing up the flow of what's happening out there, like visibly messing things up because he's not willing to just take shots, and he's not willing to kind of do what Kenrich and Isaiah Joe and Kaysa Wallace like more intuitively know how to do since they've been on the team. And I think it's, if you can't play Gordon Hayward, it's not the end of the world, because they didn't play Wiggins last night at all. And certainly you can play him. You just wish that you could have a guy who is 6'7", 6'8", out there. But also the problem is, like, Hayward doesn't play like he's 6'8", you know? Like, is there a much bigger difference between he and Wiggins defensively? Like, definitely not, in my opinion. And Wiggins is just a much more aggressive offensive player, even though Wiggins has like a very low usage rate himself. So
yeah, the thing that worries me is, does he have like that veteran cachet where he's just going to get minutes no matter what? Like, and I kind of felt that way back in the day about like Caron Butler, where it's just like, even if you wanted to imagine a world where they didn't play Caron Butler, like, he's going to get those minutes because he's Caron Butler.
I don't think so. I don't think so.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he's played every game, like, once he started. Has he sat a game yet?
I don't think he has. But, I mean, he played 10 minutes last night and didn't touch the court in the fourth quarter. So, I don't know.
That's great, but at the same time, like, he was damaging in those 10 minutes. So it's not like you can just say, like, oh, you know, like when Lindy gets in for a few minutes or Mike Muscala. Like, he's getting 10 minutes, though. That is something, and things are going really bad in those minutes.
He almost sunk the ship in 10 minutes. I mean, it obviously wasn't all his fault during that time.
No, it definitely wasn't.
But it's something that I've been willing to be patient about and not, you know, really even criticize him all that much, you know, up to this point. But we're about to reach the point where we're 11 games away from the playoffs. You know, we're getting pretty close there to the level of, hey, like, we reach like six games left and he's still playing like this. I mean, you just might as well sit him, play Wiggins, which they know, like, you know what you're going to get out of Aaron Wiggins, you know? Like, you know what you're going to get. And so, I guess that, I mean, it's fine. It's whatever to me. I think that Hayward was unlikely to really swing a whole lot for them, but in your basketball imagination world, you kind of thought that maybe he could. Like, there was a world where he could do that, but clearly he has not been that guy to this point. There's still obviously time, but there's not been a lot of great indicators that he's just going to pop up and be their fifth guy closing the game.
I wrote down some stats about Shea, just because it's weird because we can all like tell he's not 100%.
Yeah.
But at the same time, he is taking all of the same shots. You know, it's not like
the spin move, he's not, you know.
Yeah. He's still stopping on a dime. Like, he had that mid-range shot early in the game I forget who it was over. I think it was Najee Marshall. We stopped on the dime in the mid-range. Yeah, the knife hit it right over him. Like, he's still hitting. He's still taking and making those same shots. Yeah. And had a really good efficiency up until, like, the end of that game. And then he missed a couple shots. But,
yep.
Like, so it still looks like Shai. Like, he's still doing all the Shai things. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you can just tell it's a little different. And so I was looking. So pre-All-Star game, restricted area shots, he took 6.4 per game.
Mm-hmm.
Post All-Star game, down to 5.1,
mm-hmm.
which honestly wasn't a huge fall. But then if you look at just games in March, which I think is like 11 or 12 now, down to 3.9 shots in the restricted area per game. So that's a decrease of about 2.5 restricted area shots per game.
I wonder what it is since the game in Utah, because that's the game that he pointed to where he had the thigh contusion.
Oh, really? Well, that was a really recent game.
Yeah, it was last week.
Okay. So, yeah, that's only been 4 games since then.
Yeah.
I could look that up. But then if you look at his drives, like, his drives are pretty much the same. Like, 23.9 per game before All-Star, 23.5 mm-hmm. after yeah. All-Star, 22.4 in March. So they decreased slightly, but, like, he's still driving. It's just he's not getting all the way to the rim quite as much as he did previously.
Yeah. And some of that is the defenses that they've seen, especially against the Bucks. You know, the Bucks were very good at keeping the Thunder in general out of the paint. And some teams are just more well equipped to do that than others. You know, you have Brook Lopez and Giannis. You know, that's pretty good. Restricted area shots for Shai, the last 4 games, he only has 4 per game.
Okay. But
shooting 70% still once he gets.
Yeah. I mean, he's still, that's the thing. Like, everything is kind of the same. I know his 3-point percentage is down a little bit lately.
You know, it's down a lot. Like, and this definitely matches the eye test, is that he's taking 5.5 mid range shots per game and is only shooting 31%.
Okay.
Which that definitely matches the eye test. It doesn't feel like he's getting enough lift on those on the season. So 31% the last 4 games. He's 48% on the season in the mid-range.
Yeah.
So to me, it's I mean, he's taking 2 less restricted area shots than he is the rest of the season, which is significant, but it's more mid-range shots and less efficient, which is just kind of like you said, like the stopping, starting is like maybe just a little, takes a little bit more effort with the bruise that he has on his thigh. So I think, I mean, he has time to get better before the playoffs, and, you know, he's still effective. I mean, they don't win that game without him last night. You know, he made 2 of the biggest plays down the stretch of the game. He's still being effective down the stretch, even though I think he missed all but 1 shot down the stretch. I don't know. I'm not concerned. If he was sitting out a bunch of games, I think there'd be reason to be concerned. I don't know if there's a possibility that he doesn't play tonight in Oklahoma City against the Rockets. I think that it could be possible. The way they talked, it said that Shai said that he was going to see how he felt when he woke up. You know, we'll see. My guess is that he'll play through this, and with hopes of getting better. They are home the rest of this week through Saturday, so maybe he can have some time to kind of recoup. And then certainly, and I've talked about this on lots of different places, I don't even remember where I've talked about it, but with the play-in tournament, you do have this like built-in rest before the playoffs, you know, for almost a whole week. So that's also good for them. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, You heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Yeah, clearly he's healthy enough to continue playing, but you watch how he has been playing these last couple games. And if that was what it looked like in the playoffs, like, you can feel pretty confident that, like, you're not going to see this team reach its ceiling. Like, yeah, to reach their ceiling, he has to be the MVP version of Shea. You know, he has to be. Definitely. Maybe even to win a first round series, he kind of has to be, just because the West is so tough, depending on who the matchup is. Mm-hmm. But that's my only fear, because I would hate to get, after all this time, to get to the playoffs and you have Shea at like 80%, because at that point, it's like, what are you really going to learn about this team? I mean, potentially you learn, like, somebody else, like, steps up in a major way. That would obviously be cool. But I think when you have your MVP candidate playing at below his normal level, it just knocks off your ceiling.
Oh,
by a significant amount.
With every single team. I mean, people forget about this last year, but Giannis was dealing with a really bad back problem in the first round of the playoffs last year, and, like, missed games, and they lost in the first round to the Miami Heat.
Yeah,
you know, it can happen to anybody if you have a hobbled best player. You know, if Jokic was not himself, I mean, the Nuggets would be vulnerable. You know, certainly if Anthony Edwards was not himself, the Timberwolves would be vulnerable. You know, it's every single team. You know, Booker. I mean, certainly the Suns may not even get out of the play-in if Booker's not right. So, I mean, that's the case for everybody. And this West is so, so tough right now. The Thunder sit at second currently and would play the winner of Kings Suns, which almost feels like the most favorable possible matchup right now.
Yeah.
Aside from playing the Warriors, who I think, you know, they'd have to get to one to play the Warriors at this point. So, do you agree? Is there another opponent that you would rather play?
I mean, the Pelicans.
Yeah,
I'd be open to playing them. Mm-hmm. A few more things, because I do want to talk about all that, but I just want a few more things from that game.
Yeah, yeah.
I really like the Chet Kenrich pairing.
Yeah,
I hope we see more of that, because I do think we've been overly focused on the idea of, well, they're going to use Kendrick as the backup five.
Yeah.
Come playoff times, those lineups have been really good in the past, but I like pairing those two guys together.
Yeah.
And I was looking it up. They've only played 264 minutes together this season, so it's not something they've done a lot of.
Yep.
But I just like the versatility that gives you, because comparing, I know you talked about in Slam and Jam a few weeks ago, like, well, maybe they'll play big, you know, they'll do like Chet and Jay Will.
Yeah.
I just think Kenrich is so much more versatile than Jay Will.
Yeah.
And he gives you just a lot more options, both offensively and defensively. I mean, I was looking it up. Jay Will is shooting 43% from 2-point range this season. 43%.
That's not ideal. Not ideal.
And you know, his 3-point percentage is down. He's still, it's fine. You know, I think he's like 35 or 36%. But yeah, I really like that Chet Kenrich pairing. And so I hope we see more of that going forward. The other stat that I just thought was interesting, because in the second half, I did think Jay Will was really struggling. You know, he had 3 turnovers in his 14 minutes, mm-hmm. which is uncharacteristic of him. Yeah. He did not really turn the ball over. He usually doesn't have the ball to turn it over. Mm-hmm. And one of them was just like a really, like, the transition play, where I think it was Herb Jones or maybe Najee Marshall just like ran in front of him, mm-hmm. and Jay Will just ran straight into him.
Yeah, it was Najee Marshall. It was a very weird play.
It was. I mean, it was just like in semi-transition. It wasn't like OKC was necessarily like trying to get to the hoop super quick.
Yeah.
But, and Jay Will, like, got him pretty good. It looked like he didn't necessarily truck him, but like
he just ran right. I mean, he just ran over him.
Yeah. But the other thing I was looking at is his charges. So charges per 36 minutes have gone from 1.7 last year, which led the league basically for guys who playing a lot of minutes, to 0.9. Mm-hmm. So basically cut in half. Mm-hmm. And I do think that's significant because, you know, he's not a shot blocker. You know, he's not a great rim protector or anything. And, you know, regardless of your feelings about the charge, the fact was that last year that was like a very consistent weapon for him to create turnovers.
Yeah, without a doubt it
and
was. Yeah,
that effect like has basically been cut in half this season. And I think part of it is guys in the league just like knowing he's going to do that. There was a play against Zion where you could see that Jay Will was trying to set the charge, and Zion just like knew it was coming and just kind of like danced around him and got the layup. So I don't know if it's just the rest of the league kind of getting used to it. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe they're not used to it with Brandon Pajemski right now, which is why he's getting so many charges.
Yeah, like it's funny, like rookies are the guys that are leading the league in charges every year.
Yeah, maybe you just like don't know it yet. Yeah. But then once you know a guy is going to take charges all the time. Although it was obviously very successful for Kyle Lowry his whole career. But yeah,
true.
I worry a little bit about Jay Will as a playoff rotation guy, because I'm just like, as you go across his stats, it's like, what is he like really bringing you?
Yeah.
When he's on the court, and he's obviously only going to be playing, you know, 15 minutes max. Yeah,
just a few minutes, and very specific matchups too. Like, I don't think he plays in every series. I think if they ended up playing Sacramento, he would probably play a lot in that series, just because the Thunder don't have a whole lot else to deal with Domas. So I could see him. That would be the one that I would think that he'd play more than any other series is that one specifically. Whereas
the other thing I wanted to bring up is, man, they tried a lot of lobs in that game.
They tried is the key word in this one.
I went through and counted. Now, maybe I missed one. I only counted one like totally successful lob. There were two that were failed, but they led to fouls.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I counted two more that just completely failed. So you did have four where it's like they threw the ball and nothing. It wasn't even close to being an alley-oop dunk. They were really trying to get that going for that entire game. I don't know if they've gotten better at it, but I appreciate that they're trying.
There was a giddy one that was just especially just like had zero chance of being successful, where he threw it. It was a really far lob from like the left wing, you know, out to three. Yeah. And it was just like, nope, like that one just had no prayer, you know?
Yeah, that was fun. Okay, so here's the deal, Andrew, looking at the standings. Because Dallas has won 9 of 10.
Yeah.
With their only loss being the game that Luka sat, won 5 in a row. They're now only a game back of the 5th seed and only a game and a half back of the 4 seed.
I know.
And looking at all of these teams, like across the league, they have the easiest remaining schedule of those teams.
Mm-hmm.
They have the 23rd ranked schedule. Now, it's tough. Actually, this is very interesting, because typically Houston would have been in the column that's easiest opponents. They have now been moved over.
Oh, they moved.
They've been moved. Because I was going to say Dallas does have two games left against Houston, but they are counting that as tough games. So that's even with that, they have the 23rd easiest schedule. And you look at these other teams, it is not the same. Like, so I like both the Clippers and New Orleans have top 10 hardest schedules. So I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility, because I was starting to get really worried about playing Dallas.
Yeah.
Like I just don't want to play Dallas. They could win that series. And in fact, thinking about like ESPN experts, like I could see that being a pretty even split or even favoring Dallas in terms of who people are picking.
Yeah.
I just don't want to play them. I do not want to play them.
You could convince me they could win or lose any series. They have like the highest floor, lowest ceiling, or whatever, you know, highest ceiling, lowest floor. That's the way to say it. That's what they are in the West, because you could convince me that they make it to, I mean, they can make it to the finals, honestly. I don't think like that's out of the question with where they are. And they could also lose.
Yeah, I don't want to play that team.
They could lose in round one.
Because you know what?
No
one's saying that about the Pelicans. No one's saying, oh, the Pelicans can make the finals.
No. And no one's saying the Kings or the Suns or the Lakers or Warriors could make the finals, you know.
So I was worried because, you know, OKC's remaining schedule is tough. They're only a game up on Minnesota. I think it's likely that they are going to drop to three. I think that's a very realistic scenario that they end up dropping to three.
Yeah.
And in that scenario, they're playing the sixth seed, which currently is Dallas, which was worrying me. But then I look at these remaining schedules and I'm like, I think Dallas is going to get up to, if not five, they could get up to four with the way that the Clippers are playing.
Yeah.
I don't think that's crazy. And if that happens, well, now you're looking at potentially playing the Pelicans
or the Clippers,
which I would be fine with. Or you know, maybe the Kings go on a run because the Kings are only two back of the Pelicans.
Yeah.
Only a game back of Dallas. And they play again. Their very next game is also against Dallas, which they got blown out by Dallas. Mm-hmm. So maybe they get them on the second one. But yeah, I'm not saying it's a dream scenario, Andrew. I'm just looking at how things may fall. I don't think it's I think a 3-6 matchup between OKC and New Orleans is a much more realistic scenario than I would have ever imagined like 2 weeks ago. I thought that 4-5 was like locked in.
Yeah, it felt like it.
But when Dallas wins 9 of 10 and you look at their remaining schedule and it's pretty favorable, it's like, okay, well. I mean, they play Kings, Rockets, Warriors, Hawks, Warriors, Rockets, Hornets, Heat, Pistons, Thunder.
Yeah.
So it's not like the easiest schedule in the world because you still have teams like the Warriors who and Rockets who are fighting for that final spot. So both of those teams are going all out. But I also think they could beat both of those teams. Like, I think they could go 4-0 against those teams.
Yeah.
Because when they're playing well, I mean, they just destroyed Sacramento last night.
Yeah.
They absolutely destroyed them. Mm-hmm. So those are like my overarching thoughts. I'm trying to avoid Dallas, and so I'm thinking of ways I can do that.
Yeah, they've been good lately. I mean, it's also that post All-Star break, the Clippers have been atrocious. They're 18th in net rating, -2 net rating, and they have the 28th ranked defense since the All-Star break. I mean, they have been an embarrassment. So that's also part of the story too.
I mean, we were talking about that top four as kind of locked in for so long. And now, you know, you can't even imagine a scenario where the Thunder fall to four. It's not even possible. Like, the gap there has gotten so big. I mean, six games between two and four.
Yeah. There's no way. They're locked in the top three for sure. And you know, we'll see. We don't know.
Here's where it gets interesting, Andrew. Mm-hmm. Thunder's final game of the season is against Dallas.
Yeah.
What if Dallas wins that game? They move up to the five seed, and you don't have to play them. Dallas loses that game. The Pelicans drop to, if Dallas loses that game, then they stay in the sixth seed, and you have to play them. What do you do any manipulation?
I mean, here's the deal. If I can
I'm assuming in this scenario that the Thunder are third by this point, that Minnesota has jumped them in this scenario.
If I can get Shea an entire week of rest, and also Chet, which Chet may just be like, no, I'm playing all 82 games. Like, I'm just doing it. But if I can get Shea and Dort and J-Dub and those guys an entire week of rest, like, yeah, do that option. You know, if you're locked into three, it has nothing, it will, like, the standings won't change. I'm all in favor of resting guys, especially Shea. You know, maybe Shea is the only one you rest, but even so, like, Shea, he's clearly banged up and may continue to get banged up as this season rolls through. I would say, yes, get the guy some rest. And if they win 56 or 57 games and you lock up the three seed, what an accomplishment for your season. And then let Dallas do their thing. And then it be Dallas Clippers. You know, I guess it could be.
That would be awesome. Dallas Clippers would be a great first round
series. It'd be a great series.
To have both of those teams on the other side of the bracket, I think, is good. If you have Denver, Clippers, Dallas on the other side of the bracket, I'm feeling pretty good. And in that scenario, too, Let me think about this. Yeah, the Lakers would probably be on the other side, assuming they like won out.
Yeah, the Lakers would have to win, but yeah.
Because they'd be the eighth seed. So you'd have Denver, Clippers, Pelicans, Lakers all on the other side of the bracket. I think that is like the best scenario that you could hope for.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, the Clippers. Because
then on your side of the bracket, you'd have Timberwolves, Pelicans, winner of Kings, Suns.
Yeah, that's where you want to be.
Yeah.
If and we don't know where everything's going to fall. Like this could all shift in lots of different directions, you know. So
and the reason why I just think the falling to three seed is likely is because if you look at Minnesota's schedule, like yes, they have to play Denver twice, but they still get to play. They get to play Detroit tonight. They get another game against Toronto. They get another game against the Wizards. They have some cake games
that
just aren't really on the Thunder schedule.
Chicago, anymore. Who hasn't been great.
Yeah.
Atlanta.
I mean, the Thunder, what's their easiest game? They get a Charlotte game, and that's about it.
And it's the last game of a 5-game road trip.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
So it's
and it's a huge revenge game. I mean,
so Bertons, much revenge.
Trey Mann, Micic, and Poku.
And Poku, who made the NBA's top 10 plays of the night.
Dude, I almost picked up Poku in fantasy basketball.
That is
because he's starting to get minutes, and he's starting. And by starting, I mean one game, starting to do things.
Yeah, okay. He had 11, 5 boards, 3 assists, 2 steals, and a block with 1 made 3 in 19 minutes.
See, that's really nice. It's a nice little fancy role player right there. I couldn't bring myself to do it, but I strongly considered it.
God. Shout out to Poku.
I'm glad that he's starting to get minutes, though.
Yeah, me too.
I just don't feel like they're going to give him like 30 minutes. That's what I really need. I need 30 Poku minutes to make that move.
They obviously don't want to win, so they would never do that.
Yeah, I agree.
They would never unleash Poku to such degrees.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
When you're hiring for your small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role. That's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs has the tools to help you find the right professionals for your team faster and for free. When I was looking for somebody to hire for my team, I had to go to LinkedIn Jobs because you just don't know the quality of these candidates. And the good thing about LinkedIn Jobs, it kind of helps you filter through and find the best people. LinkedIn isn't just a job board. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals that you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. On LinkedIn, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Hire professionals like a professional on LinkedIn. LinkedIn is constantly finding ways to make the process easier. They even just launched a feature that helps you write job descriptions, making the process even easier and quicker. Post your job for free at linkedin.com/dunk. That's linkedin.com/dunk to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them. You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Anything else around the league or around this team? You know, they play the Rockets tonight. Maybe we can talk about that. The Rockets they're red hot. The red hot Rockets. They've been playing great. Any fears tonight of the Rockets coming into town?
Yeah, I mean, like a lot of people have mentioned, you look back over this win streak. You know, the two good wins were at Sacramento. Actually, they did win at Phoenix and then Cleveland. So they have had some like nice wins in this run.
Mm-hmm.
The majority of this run has been, you know, two games against Portland, Utah, Chicago, two games against the Wizards and the Spurs. Yeah, so they've played a lot of bad teams. What I'm saying is like this is the best team tonight that they will have played. This will be their toughest game of this stretch and it's on the road.
Yeah.
So I am really interested to see how they look. And they have some tough games coming up too. Like then they go to Utah, okay. But then they play Dallas, Minnesota, Golden State, Miami, Dallas, Orlando.
Mm-hmm.
So, listen, I mean, this run for the Rockets, I think, has like completely flipped the narrative on their season, no matter what happens. Because not only are they getting in range of the play-in and actually playing meaningful games at the end of the season,
mm-hmm.
which is what teams like Detroit said they wanted to be doing mm-hmm. by the end of this season and right. are not. They're like sitting all their guys.
Oh, my gosh.
So I think that's really impressive, but also like Jalen Green going from a guy who you were going in this summer thinking like, should we trade him? Like, I really don't want to pay his next contract. What are we going to do about this? To now playing like a completely different player. I mean, I'm sure Rockets fans are very excited and they should be like, this is a legit little run they're having.
Yeah.
Kind of reminiscent of, you know, like when that bad Suns team, like finally got good the season before they got Chris Paul, when they like won 8 games in the bubble. They still didn't make the playoffs, but they like won those 8 games in the bubble. And it was like, okay, maybe this team is like finally turning the corner.
Yeah.
I do think it's fascinating that all this is happening without Şengün. That is really interesting to me because the thing about the season for the Rockets is, that always stuck out to me is that they've been good defensively this entire season, despite giving big minutes to Şengün, despite giving big minutes to Jalen Green. Even when all that was happening, they were a really good defensive team. But now they're getting even better, and part of that is playing like Amen Thompson a lot more, who is really coming on. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't know how Mickey Mouse this whole run is for the Rockets, but I think we are about to find out. Because the tests are going to get a lot more tougher. I don't really care about the pick. Like if it ends up 11 versus 14, doesn't make a difference to me. I think the Warriors missing the play-in is actually way funnier. Like I think as Thunder fans, you kind of have to give up on the idea that of the Rockets having a bad season. Like at this point, like if they go, I think it's because what is their current record? They're 30. Like they, if they go 6-5 the rest of the way, they're going to be a surprise team. They're going to get to 42 wins, which is crazy. That's a huge accomplishment. If they get to 40 wins, because that's what OKC was at last year, I think that's a huge accomplishment. So, giving up on the idea of the Rockets, you know, having a bad season, you have to adjust your perceptions. You know, adjust your focus. And now my focus is on how funny would it be if the Warriors completely missed the play-in? That would be funny,
especially with their payroll. Where it's at.
Yes.
I mean, it's absurd. I mean, it definitely like just slams the door in their face of being like of the two timeline thing, like having any sort of.
And there's just like no easy outs either. Like what do you do this summer? It would be so hard to readjust on the fly and come back next season with a like legitimate playoff team.
Yeah, how do you find, and Marcus Thompson wrote a piece at The Athletic, it's like, how do they find their second star next to Steph, who is still very much worth the $52 million that he's owed?
He absolutely is, but you also have to remind us that he is like one of our oldest stars. He is 36.
Yeah. Oh, I know.
He's turned 36. Like it's over. Like you would have to find a like under 25, like all-star level player.
Yeah.
And how are you getting that?
You should have drafted it with the many opportunities that you had.
Yeah, that's true.
They had the chance to do it, and they blew it. Kuminga's been better. I mean, like the Franz Wagner Kuminga thing. You know, I think you'd still rather have Franz Wagner, but you know, Kuminga's kind of closed the gap there. But I don't know that either one of those guys is necessarily like making or breaking this era. at this point.
No, probably not. I mean,
it was really Halliburton. It was really just Halliburton. Like, if they could have, if they would have drafted Halliburton, like they've said, like Steve Kerr has said, like that was his guy. If they'd have just drafted Halliburton, it would have changed a lot of things.
Yeah.
This era. But they didn't.
But it's awesome. They're going to play each other, which is very exciting. April 4th.
Yeah.
In Houston.
Yeah. That's a big one.
Warriors Rockets.
I still.
Can the Rockets make up for that game years ago, 2019? When the when KD went down, everyone counted out the Warriors. Probably my favorite Warriors game, because it was peak Rockets hate.
Yeah.
Yes, I hated the Warriors, but they were down KD, so it's like, I don't have to root for KD anymore. And then they go to Houston and just like completely show them up.
Yeah.
And just like, that was a very cool like franchise win. I think that like was one of their best wins. To get to the finals. Mm-hmm. So can they make up for that? Can they redeem themselves some way of those teams knocking Golden State out of the play-in? That would be awesome.
It's going to be must-see TV that night. That's not on national television, is that? I mean, it can't.
I think they switched it because I saw yesterday that they pulled some game from that night. So I'm assuming they're replacing it with that game.
I mean, they should.
Yeah.
I mean, it's it should be like one of the more competitive regular season games that we've seen in a long time.
Yeah.
But yeah, the Rockets' schedule's tough down the stretch. And then, I mean, the Warriors should be able to take care of business. But we've been saying that
they should, but it's going to get dicey over this next week just because the Warriors they're going to play a couple tough teams. Like they play the Magic and the Mavericks before they play Houston.
Yeah.
And depending what if Houston can beat OKC and then they beat Utah, you know, in a couple of days, we could talk about them being tied.
Yeah. Yeah. The win against
awesome
the Heat was a big
going into that game.
The Heat game was a big one for the Warriors to get. That was
And then the other thing I'm looking at, mm-hmm. last thing, mm-hmm. is Lakers Suns.
Yeah.
Now, Lakers are still two games back, but the Suns just lost that game to the Spurs.
Yeah. I'm like done with the Suns now. After that loss.
Oh, yeah.
That was such a bad loss.
And the Lakers won four in a row. We'll see. I needed to get to one before I'm really excited. But what makes it interesting is the Suns' closing schedule.
I was just about to read this to you. Yeah, yeah. Go ahead.
Nuggets, Thunder, Pelicans, Cavs, Wolves, Pelicans, Clippers, Kings, Wolves. That is crazy.
I've heard it's like one of the hardest schedules in years. Like hardest, like yeah. closing season schedules in years.
And that's why I'm like a little bit more willing to kind of buy into the Lakers. Like, well, at least let's see what they can do, because that schedule, I mean, if you went 500 in that, like if that was in the middle of the season,
yeah,
that would, you even as a team like Phoenix, like if that was OKC's schedule in the middle of the season, if they went, you know, 5-5 or whatever it was, 500, I would feel pretty good.
Yeah.
Like, okay. And meanwhile, the Lakers have games against Memphis, Brooklyn, Toronto, the Wizards, Memphis.
Yeah.
So that could get juicy.
I think it probably will. Yeah, I would not have imagined that the Lakers would be in a position to be in the 7-8. And which might even be more incentive for the Thunder to not be the 2 seed. You know?
Yeah.
Like the more and more you look at it, there's like more incentive, at least matchup wise, for OKC to be 3 and not 2 at this point.
Yeah. And the other thing I'm thinking of, okay, let's say the Warriors make it, but the Suns drop to the 9. And so you have this winner go home game, KD versus the Warriors.
God.
In that scenario, I think I flip and I think I'm rooting for the Warriors now.
Yeah,
because that would be so funny for these Suns to completely miss the playoffs after everything they did.
Yeah, and it sets up KD calling Sam Presti in the parking lot after the game, begging him, please just trade for me, please. I know how much cap space you have. I'm aware of it. I'm gonna make sure that this happens. Just get me back to OKC. And
this is the summer to do it. They could do it. They have the cap space. They would only have to include a smaller contract.
Yep.
It's possible.
Yep. It's true. It sets it up. I could see it. He crying in the parking lot after the game. Did you see the video I made with my manager? Did you see it? Okay. All right. Hope everybody's doing great. Hope everybody's having an awesome day. Thanks so much for tuning in. We have lots of people here on the stream with us. If you're not subscribed to our YouTube channel, please subscribe to our YouTube channel. Just search Down to Dunk and you'll find it there. Got people tuning in from all over the world. Very thankful for all you guys. Hope you guys have a great rest of your Wednesday. And we will talk to you guys again on Friday.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.